Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Welcome back to the Bump and Stacy Show. Dad vibes today. Got my guy Curtis Rogers hanging out, spitting that knowledge, doing what he does. And then we're going to talk about this QB tour that John Schneider and Pete Carroll are on.
The world tour. Do we get shirts? Does it have each location? Like, oh man, I was at the Lexington, Kentucky show.
They should do it old school and drive around in a bus. You know what I'm saying?
Make
it a
Madden Cruiser.
Exactly. So their first stop was in Columbus. You go over there, you see the young guy, CJ Stroud. You see Njigba and the other guys that they have over there, because the Hawks have the number 5 pick. So what they're doing is they're doing their due diligence. They're saying, look, we're going to make it so everyone thinks that we are going to pick a quarterback at this number 5 spot.
Of course.
And who's to say that they're not? You still get Anthony Richardson's pro day next Thursday. They're definitely going to stop there. I think that's the more realistic thing. But they've been in Columbus already. Tuscaloosa yesterday, and they're going to Kentucky. They're probably already in Kentucky today. So they're going out. They're checking out all of these quarterbacks. They're taking selfies with them. We're waiting for the Will Levis selfie to drop.
Oh.
We're waiting for it.
Yeah. Think of the clicks it's going to get when it drops, because CJ Stroud and Bryce Young have done some big numbers. When those photos have been dropped on social media, on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, Seahawks Twitter's going to go nuts when they see the Will Levis selfie. What if they don't take a selfie with Will Levis? That's going to throw teams off their scent even more.
Yeah.
Like, this whole tour that they're on right now of these pro days, back to back to back, one after another, and then next week they're going to go to Florida in Gainesville. I mean, this whole draft season is all about posturing. It's all about creating smoke screens. It's all about throwing people off your scent, because you don't want to let teams know what you're doing, but you also kind of do want to let teams know what you're doing. You want to let teams know that, you know, we might take a quarterback. We don't have to. We might. You know, hey, we could trade up to number 1 overall. We wouldn't, you know, we got multiple first-round picks to work with. Like, that's all this time of year is, and that's what makes the lead up to the draft one of the more confusing times in our coverage of the NFL throughout the year, is that it is entirely speculation.
Right.
There's nothing definitive about what anybody is doing across the league. The only definitive thing we know is that the Panthers are going to be picking number 1 overall.
Yeah.
And even then there were those rumors like, oh, they still might trade down if they feel like they have a couple quarterbacks in mind.
Yeah, it's all posturing. Now, we can't ignore that they are looking at other prospects as well on these trips. But with that number 5 pick, you nailed it. It's okay. We have to make it seem like all these guys are possibilities. I'm a firm believer that CJ is going to go number 1 to the Carolina Panthers, especially after hearing what Josh McCown had to say to him on the low. When you buy a house in Charlotte, then we'll play some horse. So we look at this tour, and then they stop. Excuse me. Then they stop in Tuscaloosa. Yes, they're looking at Bryce Young, but they're also looking at Will Anderson. Okay, Will Anderson, I feel like, is more the possibility. And then our guy To'o. Am I saying that
Henry
right?
Henry To'o.
So they're getting a 2-for-1. We call that a deal. The 2-for-1. They're going to these places and they're looking at these quarterbacks. They're having these conversations. They're making the league believe that this is a possibility, but they're also looking at these other prospects that could drop to them as well. I call that bargain shopping. These guys are doing exactly what they're supposed to do. So now they go to Kentucky. I don't know anyone else on that team that these guys are looking
for. Pete Carroll and John Schneider are attending Kentucky's pro day. It's for one guy and one guy only. I don't care who else is on the roster. There's nobody there that needs the attention of those two in person the way Will Levis might. Because, look, he's one of the top quarterback names in this draft. I think Mel Kiper had him mocked to the Seahawks in one of his mocks earlier this offseason. You can say that the Seahawks were at Ohio State for multiple reasons. You can say the Seahawks were at Alabama for multiple reasons. That doesn't exist at Kentucky's pro day. And it may not even exist at Florida's Pro Day either, which is going to be next week. There's one reason and one reason only that they are attending these Pro Days. And that is why you cannot take quarterback out of the possibilities at pick number five. Because, look, eventually the Seahawks are going to have to commit to a quarterback long term. I'm not just saying these 1, 2, 3 year deals that they've given. They've given Geno Smith a 1 year deal last year. They've given him a deal that could turn into a multi-year deal if he hits these incentives or if they choose to bring him back. But it's not really a long term investment. It's not really something that you're going to see Geno be the starter in Seattle for the next decade unless. Unless he improves upon last season or unless the Seahawks just really do like Geno in that way, eventually you're going to have to commit to somebody long term. And what's the best route to do that, to make a long term commitment? It's by drafting a quarterback and getting him on a rookie deal so that you have a lot more money to, round out the rest of your roster.
Now, if you've listened to this show over the past month, maybe once or twice a week, you probably have heard me say that I don't get all the hype over Will Levis. I understand his size, his strength, but I would put Anthony Richardson in front of Will Levis. He's the only quarterback that I feel like if the Hawks take him, I'd be disappointed. Now, with that number five pick, if CJ were to fall, if Bryce were to fall, I understand if they were to pick one or two of those guys because of what you just mentioned. You just don't know what Geno's going to be. Now, you paid him accordingly. He had a Pro Bowl year last year. You expect him to run it back or even improve this year, and he's saying and doing all the right things, but you just don't really know, so you need an insurance plan. That's why I look at Anthony Richardson, and I go, all right, man, that would make sense to me. You get a guy who's going to back up Geno who needs a year or two to develop. Now, Dan Orlovsky talked to the morning show, and he said he doesn't call Anthony a project quarterback.
Calls him an opportunity.
Opportunity and development. He likes to use different words, but it all is the same thing, as this guy has to work on some things. That's the pick that makes the most sense to me. If CJ were to drop, not going to happen. That would be my pick. But that's why they're going on this tour, because you are at the number. Now, if they were at the number, their first pick was number 20. They wouldn't be on this tour right now. They'd be sitting back at home at VMAC doing their analysis and shortening their list day by day.
They definitely wouldn't be scouting C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young.
No, wouldn't be touching.
Probably not Will Levis. Maybe they'd go to see Anthony Richardson, because I'm not completely sold yet that Richardson is a top five, top ten pick. Maybe he slides, but. Yeah, of those four guys, I think Richardson is the best shot of falling to number 20 for the Seahawks.
Yeah, I don't even see him falling to 20.
No, I know, that's the thing.
Yeah, the Raiders would grab him, I think.
That's the thing, is that there are so many QB needy teams at the start of the draft that I don't see any of these guys surviving until 20, but of these four, Richardson probably has the best shot at it.
So they're making these trips. They're in Kentucky today, and they're taking these selfies. They are putting it out to the public that we are a real threat at that number five pick. Do you see a world where they trade that number five pick?
Yes.
Really?
I see a world where they trade number five and trade down, because the Raiders have, what, pick number seven?
Number seven.
If the Raiders wow them with an offer and you pick up maybe an extra second rounder or something like that, I think the Seahawks would gladly do that, especially if they've settled in on one of these defensive linemen. Because if you go right now, you've got three of the first four picks are expected to be quarterback. You would have the Raiders at pick number five, probably going to go quarterback.
Yep.
So that leaves...
The Rams are behind them at six.
Well,
they're not going to grab a quarterback.
The Lions got it from the Rams.
Lions are at six.
They're probably going to go... They've got a few places they could go. I'm sure they would love to get their hands on one of these defensive linemen, maybe an offensive lineman, probably a D lineman to pair with Aiden Hutchinson, just to make that group even more better than what it was a year ago. So that leaves the Seahawks at what, pick number seven, with the chance at getting still like a guy like Tyree Wilson, who I think the Seahawks really do like. It'll be interesting to see if they send the entire fleet of coaches to go watch Tyree Wilson's pro day at Texas Tech. I'll be interested to see what they do there, because that's another situation where it's like there's one clear guy at this school's pro day that teams are interested in, like it is at Kentucky, like it is at Florida. Will they send the entire coaching staff to go watch Tyree Wilson's pro day the way they have with all these other guys?
Exactly. The more I hear you talk this through, the more I start to believe in the possibility. Initially, I was on the side that there's no way they're going to trade this number five pick. Now,
I don't want them falling out of top 10.
Yeah. If Jalen Carter is available, I think they stay. If he's gone, then I think they can move on. You move back to number seven. You think Detroit is going to try to shore up that defense, one of the worst defenses in the league last year. That makes sense. You mentioned Tyree Wilson. If he's available, yeah, I can definitely see that going down, because you look at the Indianapolis Colts. Now, I think the Colts are going to pick up Will Levis. I think Will Levis is an Indianapolis Colt type of guy. I think they pick up Will Levis. But if Jalen Carter is available at five, then I think they go with Jalen Carter. And then Stacy has to jump into Lake Union.
That's one thing we're all rooting for here, is the chaos that would ensue just on a show basis. Not necessarily the chaos that would ensue after Jalen Carter. Now, there would be a lot of conversations to be had if the Seahawks do make that pick, whether or not this was the right move or not. But we're all rooting for Stacy to have to jump into Lake Union, because, you know, she thought it was so outrageous early on in the draft process. And now you look at, like, the big move was Carolina moving up to number one, where that ensured a quarterback going number one. And then Houston's obviously going quarterback number two. And then Indy's going quarterback at four. And now she's like, uh-oh, this may, in fact, happen. And we were able to secure the audio of her bet.
You found it?
Yeah, of her guarantee. We did find it. So
nice.
We'll make sure that continues to play and continues to ring in people's ears and continues to ring in Stacy's ears. Like, uh-oh, I may have made a bed that my mouth can't cash here. So I'm hoping that there's going to be a lot of options for the Seahawks at number five. But with this tour bump, I mean, of all the guys that they are kind of looking at right now, are there any that you are like, yes, absolutely go get this guy at number five if he's there, no questions asked? Or are you still trying to get a feel out of it too? Like, let's say both Will Anderson and Jalen Carter are there at five. Mm. Is there anybody that you're like, I need this guy in Seattle?
I say Jalen. And the reason why,
really?
I say Jalen, I think people
even over Will Anderson.
I think people love Will Anderson over Jalen, but I think Will is more of an outside type of guy, edge in type of guy. I look at Jalen Carter, man, I think he's an interior. That's what we need at this point. You let go of Al Woods, you need someone who's going to fill that void right now, and I think Jalen Carter can do that. Now, the knock on him, obviously, is that he came in out of shape, the incident when he was racing and a teammate passed away. I understand that. I'm just looking at what this team needs right now, and that is it. Now, also, I would understand if they don't go Jalen and they were to go to Will if he was available, because of the same reasons that I mentioned. You have to be comfortable with investing in someone who has a recent history that is not the greatest. There's several things that you can point at, and I get it and I understand. I just look at the talent, I look at the need, and I go, he fits exactly what this team needs at this moment.
He does, but of the two, of Anderson and Carter, if either one of them are available at number five, let's say both of them are available at number five for some crazy reason, I'm going Will Anderson.
Yeah,
and I'm running my card to the podium to take Will Anderson. Because
Sprint.
I mean, look, Aiden Hutchinson last year, the best pass rusher. Well, you had Trevon Walker go number one overall, Aiden Hutchinson go number two overall. You look at what Hutchinson added to that Lions defense. I mean, had what, I think close to nine sacks in his rookie season. Like, he was the one can't miss guy in last year's draft at a premium spot. You look at the Seahawks, they have not had a pass rusher of really any kind of, you know, greatness since the Michael Bennett, Cliff Averill era. I know Chenna Nwosu had a good season, had, what, close to double-digit sacks, same with Daryl Taylor, but, like, if you can get one of these guys, if you can get a Will Anderson type that is somebody that people look at and say potential, you know, Pro Bowl pass rusher, I would love to have that guy here.
Yeah. Hey,
Pete Carroll yesterday at Alabama's Pro Day was photographed shaking Will Anderson's hand, had the biggest smile on his face that I've ever seen from him.
Feels good sitting at number five. Feels good. Hey, celebrate Mariners Open Day by joining us at our live broadcast outside of the left field gates at T-Mobile Park. We'll start live at 10 a.m. Nice and frosty is the Bump and Stacey show. And then Wyman and Bob will take you all the way up to the pregame show at 6 p.m. This hour, the Bump and Stacey show is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Brady Bones, headlines, baby.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacey.
Pete Carroll and John Schneider are on their way to Kentucky to watch Will Levis throw at his pro day. What's the real headline?
Pete and John continue to troll their QB tour that will result in no QB being taken at that number five pick. We just had a full segment about this thing. See, Raj, quarterback at five, not at five. We're thinking Will, Jalen. What are your thoughts, man?
The most likely outcome is Anthony Richardson of the quarterbacks that ends up at Seattle at number five. But I don't think it's going to happen. I would love it if they were able to get a quarterback later on with either pick number 20 or an early second round pick, but I just don't see it happening right now. But hey, they got to collect the Infinity Stones. You got to get a selfie with CJ Stroud, Bryce Young, Will Levis, and Anthony Richardson. And when you cash in all four of those, then you get 10% off your order at participating Red Lobsters. You got to show photographic proof to your waiter or waitress, like, hey, we got all four selfies. It's like, all right, you get 10% off your bill.
I'm going to Sizzler.
Sizzler? All right.
Is there a Sizzler around here?
The only one I remember was in Tukwila, and I think that one got torn down recently.
Man, childhood memories going to Sizzler growing up.
Was that the Bumpus family restaurant? Like, there were always those restaurants that you thought of as fine dining as a kid.
Yeah.
And then you grow up older, and you're like, wait, that was not fine dining at all.
It wasn't. It was affordable. Yeah. And it felt good. Sizzler was the post-tournament restaurant. Every time we went to a tournament, there's a Sizzler right off the highway. We'd pull over, bam, going Sizzler.
Headline rewrites.
The Mariners blasted five home runs off the Reds and won 17-6. What's the real headline?
Fun to watch, but none of it matters.
That's what they tell you.
That's what they tell me. It matters to me, though. It matters to me. I want to see success, especially a week before opening day. I want to see Julio hit a bomb. I want to see Suarez. I want to see Teoscar Hernandez. I want them to be the people we expect them to be during the regular season at some point during spring. Imagine if we went a whole spring and Julio doesn't go yard and Suarez doesn't go yard and Teoscar looks okay. Then we'd be sitting here saying, I don't know, I hope he turns it on during the regular season. But now we see it, so we know that it's still there. We know it didn't go anywhere, but you know how humans are. We got to see some stuff to believe it sometimes.
We do. And one thing I hope for this Mariners offense in 2023 is that they're not as reliant on the home run as they were at the end of the season last year, where it was like if they weren't hitting home runs, they weren't scoring runs.
Right.
I want to see them be able to produce runs by hitting balls into the gap, by putting runners on base, you know, getting, you know, two-run doubles, continuing innings, continuing rallies, like sustainable offense. I want to see that. I don't want to see games where it's like if they're not hitting three or four solo home runs, if they're not, you know, hitting, if Suarez isn't hitting, if Julio's not hitting, if Ty France isn't hitting, like, balls out of the yard, then they're not scoring. I don't want to see that this year. I want to see an offense that is able to sustain even if the long ball's not present.
I like that. You got to be able to adjust your game. Now, there's enough power to where we're going to see some long balls, but I'm with you, man. Put the balls in play, men on base, get them in.
Headline rewrites.
Luis Castillo was officially named the Mariners' opening day starter. What's the real headline?
to the surprise of absolutely no one. This is why he is here. He is the ace. He is the leader. Now, you still got Robbie Ray, who I thought about initially when I saw this report. But, yeah, it makes complete sense. Luis Castillo is your guy. You want him out there opening day, setting the tone. I remember the first game he played it with the Mariners jersey on. He changed the way this team was viewed. Like he did.
Yes.
He had kind of a Julio effect in his own right. You saw Luis Castillo and what he was doing, and you go, there's something special about this guy. Something's different. This team has a different feel. That's what Julio did to this team. I'm looking forward to seeing him go to work.
There was always an energy in the ballpark when Castillo had the ball in his hand. He was a guy that he still is a guy that makes people pay attention when he's out on the mound. Like, there was that start against, I want to say it was the White Sox. He ended up losing this start, which may not make it a great example, but I believe he struck out the first, seven or eight batters of the game. And it was like, man, only this guy can do that in this rotation. Like, Kirby and Logan and Robbie Ray, all very talented in their own rights, but like, only Castillo is the kind of guy that can do what he did that day. And then seeing his performance against the Blue Jays in game one of the wild card round, and then seeing his performance against the Astros in game two of the divisional round. I mean, outside of the one home run he allowed to, I think it was Alvarez in game two, he was flat out dominant in the postseason. Like, you got to have a rock. You got to have your La Piedra, as his nickname is. That's what he is in this rotation.
Is that what rock means?
I believe so.
La Piedra?
Yeah.
I should know that.
You're the one. Yeah.
My wife's Mexican and Salvadoran. I should know that one, Curtis. All right, man. We got lots more to do, man. It ain't over yet. Got about an hour and a half of dealing with us, man. And when we come back, we're going to go to the NFL headlines. We're going to talk about the competition committee, Thursday night football, some rule changes. All that is coming up next on the Bump and Stacey Show.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Happy Friday to all you guys out there listening to the Bump and Stacy Show. But we got Audible Omaha. Curtis Rogers is in here doing what he does, spitting that knowledge. It's time for NFL headlines. Let's talk about this. 17 proposals will be heard by the competition committee. Now, I love that every year they get together and some owners and throw out some ideas and say, hey, why don't we try this? And one proposal that I love right now is to permit the use of the number zero. Why isn't I could see well we see Josh Gordon with the Dragons rocking a zero.
We do.
It looks clean, man. I like the zero.
I believe it is allowed at the collegiate level now.
Is it?
I think because there are just so many players on rosters, they needed an extra digit to have more numbers available for players. But yeah, adding the jersey number zero, that's not gonna hurt anybody.
Nah.
Like it's a digit, sure. I people are like, oh, zero is the absence of actual numbers. Like, it means nothing. Okay, but it looks cool on a jersey.
It's a real number, though.
Yeah.
It's a real number.
Yes, it's a number. But it's like, what is it? What's the color? Black is like the absence of color.
Uh-huh.
People are like, oh, it's not real. And it's like, yeah, it is. Yeah. Like, it's a color. Like, zero is the absence of an actual number. Like, it means nothing. Okay, but then why is zero a digit? Like,
why does it exist?
Yeah.
Here's another rule. Expand the coach's challenge system to include personal fouls called on the field. I like this one because personal fouls are more violent, I would say, penalties. And sometimes they just get it wrong. Now, I'm all for dealing with human error. I think that's part of the game, right? That's why I don't want robots in the majors, because human error is real. I love when batters stand there and they check with the ump, like, oh, that you calling that a strike today? Cool. Now I know I adjust my game. Same thing with football. You have to adjust your game to the humans who are calling the game. But I do like this. Some personal fouls are egregious and I don't agree with them. So let them take a look at it.
I like the alternative to the onside kick, because what we've seen in the NFL over the last few years when they've changed the rules on the onside kick, they don't allow for players to run up like they used to. There have been way less onside kick recoveries in the league. I think, who is it? Younghoe Koo, the Falcons kicker. He's like the only kicker I know of that can actually like successfully do an onside kick.
Yeah.
So giving other teams the alternative to possess the ball, the 4th and 20 from the kicking team's 20-yard line. So if you convert it, you get the ball on your own 40-yard line at the at the shortest there. You could potentially get it even further. I think that'd be way more fun than seeing an onside kick get recovered by the receiving team time and time again. The one or two times that it happens during a season just doesn't excite me like it used to anymore.
So many things have to go right on an onside kick for it to be recovered by the kicking team. So yes,
you gotta get the bounce, you gotta get somebody to bobble it.
Yeah,
you gotta get your guy just running directly into the receiver. Like, yeah, there's so many factors that
dudes get lit up on onside kicks. Goodness gracious. All right, next up, owners will be asked at next week's league's meeting to approve a flex scheduling plan for late season Thursday games. Curtis, your thoughts here?
Garbage.
Yeah.
Garbities. As you like to call it. Thursday night football is not something that anybody else wants besides the TV networks.
Yeah.
The players don't want it. The coaches don't want it. Some fans may want it. It is a nice little treat in the middle of the week for NFL heads. But like at the end of the day, this is just throwing caution to the wind when it comes to player safety. Like, I can't imagine playing multiple Thursday night games in a season. Now, I believe the Cowboys play multiple Thursday night games. They always play the Thanksgiving Day game. And then I think they always play the ensuing Thursday night game after that. But they get a full week off in between those. So technically they get, you know, a normal amount of time off. But, like, you're asking a team to have 2 weeks during the season with only, what, 4 days off, really?
Yeah.
That's absurd. That's not fair, really.
4 days off and really 2 days to prepare, because you got to let your guys rest for a day. And then you practice for a couple days, and then you're right back at it. That's why we see Thursday night football games, and it looks just sloppy. It doesn't look like a Sunday game, for sure. All right, next up, the NFL is looking at the XFL, USFL, and NCAA rules to improve kickoffs and punts. I really like this. So I look at the XFL and what they do. They line up guys 10 yards apart, the kicking team and the receiving team, and the kicking team cannot move until the returner has the football. And what that does, because they're 10 yards apart, it limits just the high-speed collisions. We've seen a lot of devastating injuries on the kickoff team. So I like that. The only tweak that I would do, I would have at least two or three guys be able to stagger a bit. So move a guy up 5 yards. That means the kicking team would have to move a guy or two back 5 yards just to create more lanes. Because when you think of big plays, I think of Ted Ginn one time. I believe it was the Rose Bowl, taking one to the house. Devin Hester. Why am I blanking on Percy Harvin taking one to the house?
Cordarrelle Patterson
made, he wouldn't be in the league right now if he weren't taking punts back to the house or kickoffs back to the house. Dante Hall, those are some of the most exciting plays in the NFL are these returns. So I don't like the fact that it's almost eliminated. Don't eliminate it. Just tweak it a little bit because that can change again.
You want some breaking news?
Let's get it.
We've got the Will Levis selfie.
The Seahawks have tweeted out
the Will Levis selfie. We've got Levis front and center. There's Pete. There's John. There's Greg Olson. I'm not sure who the other guys are in the picture, but there's about four other guys in this picture. None of them are Shane Waldron. So let's read into that.
Okay.
Why isn't Shane Waldron in this picture, Bum? Is he out on Will Levis as a potential option for the Seahawks at quarterback?
Here are the two options. Either he's out on Levis, he doesn't want to be a part of this, or he went a little hard last night. He had to stay back at the hotel. You know what I'm saying? That's always an option.
Shane Waldron.
Especially with football coaches, man. They
Shane
get after
Waldron
it.
Does not strike me as a guy that's like getting after it in Lexington, Kentucky.
Hey, maybe that's his vibe. Bluegrass. Maybe he likes bluegrass. You know what I'm saying?
But yeah, look, Will Levis.
It's official.
Front and center. It's official.
He has spoken
to the Seahawks. I think we just spend the rest of our day breaking down this selfie. We need to get a body language expert in here. What does this smile, the width of Will Levis's mouth, what does it mean? What is he actually telling us in this picture?
I like that. Break it down. You see, they've made this a thing. They've successfully made this a thing. We're talking about this. I wonder if that was their plan. I wonder after their first picture, they got that reaction and go, yeah, guys, let's run with this. Let's make this a thing. There's no other team doing that, right? They're the only team taking selfies with these quarterbacks.
It's I mean, now they have to do an Anthony Richardson selfie.
Got to do it. All right, last one. The Seahawks offseason dates were announced. Their offseason program begins April 17th, OTAs on May 22nd, and mandatory minicamp on June 6th. It's getting close. It's getting real. We got dates, man. This is the longest part of the year for me because there's no football. It's none of a speculation. You got spring ball going. Next week, once baseball starts, things will pick up a little bit. You got the NBA approaching the playoffs. The NHL is approaching the playoffs. Once you get dates for the offseason program, things are getting real. I remember my first offseason program showing up after the draft, and you realize you're like, Mama, I'm here. I'm in the NFL.
You're in the building.
This is wild. I got my own locker with my name on it. It's a great feeling for these young men after the draft. The veterans coming back, you know, they've done this a few times.
Your jersey number when you played for the Seahawks was 16. Was it always 16?
Yeah,
16. Yeah? Yep. From the very start, you were like, this is my number.
They gave me 16. I'm like, ugh. I don't know if I like
that
it.
That is a number that you don't really see.
It's a weird looking number, man. 16. It is. I thought of Jake Plummer.
Yeah, he was a number 16. Ryan Leaf was, I think, 16. Too,
here's the crazy part, too, though. My very first jersey in football was number 16. Like,
Wow. Full circle.
Culver City High School, number 16. I switched it to 7 later, but my very first one was 16. All right, that is NFL headlines. We got lots more to do when we get back. We got Curtis Rogers filling in for Stacey on the Bump and Stacey Show on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Bumpin' Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Rost.
Earlier we talked about what time of the year it is. It's mock season. It's list season. It's speculation, especially when it comes to football and baseball. So we try to make sense of everything that's going on around us. We focused on Pete Carroll and John Schneider going to these pro days and taking these pictures. What does it mean?
Can I just say that whenever we get messages on the Mac and Jack's text line saying like, all you guys do is speculate. Yeah, that's what sports radio is all about, man. Like, what do we think is going to happen? What are they going to do? Yeah.
What do you want us to do?
And this time of year, when the only professional, like the Kraken are playing, sure. The Sounders have started their season too, but like the Mariners have not played real regular season games. The Seahawks have a draft coming up in a little over a month. Like, yeah, there's plenty to speculate about right now.
Plenty. That's our job. That's what we do. So we will continue to speculate, and we're going to speculate right now. We're going to try to make sense of the Al Woods move. Now, when we thought about this D-line, there were one or two guys who at least I felt needed to come back. One, Quentin Jefferson. I thought Quentin Jefferson was going to be a guy that the Hawks were going to keep. They end up releasing him. But the number one head honcho, big body, the guy I thought the Hawks needed to take care of was Al Woods. Yes, he's 36 years old. He's got some wear and tear on him, but he was one of the most consistent pieces on this defensive line, but they decide to move on from him, and they don't save a lot of money. They save, what, like $3.5 million or something like that. So with that move, we're going to try to make sense of this thing. What does that move mean? It means they for sure are going with a D lineman with that number 5 pick. Forget all these selfies. All right, look at the moves that are being made. They are for sure.
Open your eyes, people.
Going with a D lineman at number 5.
We think. Yeah. conventional wisdom would tell you defensive line, but look, so many mock drafts out there have had the Seahawks looking quarterback at number 5. And that is going to be the ultimate question of like, what is the more important thing for the 2023 Seahawks? And really what they do in this draft will influence what they do in next year's draft. If you don't take a quarterback this year, you might be looking quarterback next year. Like at some point you're going to have to address that position. Is this quarterback class worth investing in at the sake of missing out on some really good defensive line talent, the Will Anderson, Jalen Carter, Tyree Wilson triumvirate at the top of the draft? Like, are those three guys worth missing out on if you find your quarterback of the future that may not even play this year, that may have to sit on the bench for an entire season before they see the field, a la what the Chiefs did with Patrick Mahomes and Alex Smith. Now, I think the big difference between the Chiefs in 2017 and the Seahawks of 2023 is that the Chiefs of 2017 were already a playoff team, just like the Seahawks were. But I feel like their roster was much more complete than the Seahawks roster is right now. Like, they won, I think, 11 games that year. Alex Smith was a good quarterback to have in your system. And they kind of had that luxury of being able to bring in a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes, sit him for a year, and then let him take the reins in his second season. Do the Seahawks have that luxury right now of having a roster where you can maybe draft and stash a guy that you take in the first round? That's a lot of talent to want to just put on the bench for a year, especially at pick number five. Like, you're saying, you know what? We are better off in the long run by not having a contribution in 2023 from our pick at number five. That's going to be tough for a lot of people to take, I think.
Yeah, especially because there's enough talent to win right now. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're looking at what this team has done, and I think people's perception of this team has changed. Mine definitely changed. It's time to win right now, or you think you can win right now. And when you lose a guy or you release a guy like Al Woods, there has to be a corresponding move. I've seen none so far. Yes, you got Jay Reed, you have Dre Jones, but you don't have that big body in the middle. So when I saw that they released Al Woods and said, "We appreciate your services and then thank you and all that good stuff," I'm thinking, okay, so what are they going to do? And what opportunities do they have to make that right or to fill that void? And it starts with the draft, because they don't have a lot of money left as far as free agency goes. That's also why I don't believe that that Bobby is going to be a Seahawk, because there just isn't a lot of money left. So you got to look at this draft and say, what do we need right now? What do you need right now? And what you need right now is a big body at that nose tackle that can take on double teams and keep your linebackers clean. You also need linebackers. You need another linebacker, at least one more, and some for the cheap. So that's why I look at the Al Woods move and I go, there has to be a corresponding move. It can't just be, okay, let go of Al Woods and we're not going to fill that void.
It was a decision that, for those of us on the outside looking in, kind of confusing, but in cut number 8, John Schneider discussed that yesterday with Wyman and Bob and kind of discussed why that move was necessary to make.
Yeah, Al's situation was really cash and cap, you know, so, you know, everybody has a cash budget in the NFL, you know, you need to work within, and you know, every team's, you know, probably slightly different. And, you know, although we may show, if you go to like websites or whatever and say, hey, you know, where are the Seahawks with their salary cap, there's a lot of budgeted items that fall into that as well. When you talk about incentives, pregame roster bonuses, injuries, you know, and, you know, we're going to have, you know, like we have, you know, Jordan Brooks and Brian Monet, who, you know, are, you know, unfortunately are going to miss some time here, kind of counting against their cap as well. And so you have to, there's a whole, you know, there's a ton of different accounting mechanisms that go into this thing. And we just felt that this time, you know, we wouldn't shut the door on Al coming back. You know, we need to create some space to try to get something done. And you know, we're still working through some of those issues and how we can use that cap room and the cash effectively.
You know what that reminded me of? When I was a kid, we grew up, we didn't have a lot of money. We used to go grocery shopping. And sometimes we get to that register and we ain't got enough.
Got to put some stuff back.
And my mom be like, hey, go put that back. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That's what I'm saying with Al Woods. If they're at the register, they're saying, all right, we got to make a decision right here. Go ahead. All right, let's let Al Woods
do it. Do we need this box of popsicles?
Yeah. Do we really need it?
Or do we need, you know, this loaf of bread?
Exactly. That's what John Schneider and Pete Carroll had to do in that situation.
Yeah, and look, as we're all, you know, we've been the disappointed kids having to go back to the freezer section, hang our head, put the push pops back in the freezer.
Not the push pops.
I know. It's like, I guess my parents don't love me. You know? No. But, yeah, I mean, you got to make those tough decisions. he's 36 years old, so you kind of wonder how much longer, how much does he have left in the tank? Obviously, he had a really good year this last season for the Seahawks. Was the only guy, it felt like, on that defensive line at times that wasn't out of place, that was meant for a 3-4 defense playing that nose tackle position. And I don't think this is the end, so to speak, without Woods in Seattle. I think there could be a restructure of some kind, get him here on a lower number. And I mean, look, he's 36 years old. So again, it's not something that's going to, you know, satisfy that need for the foreseeable future. But if you're looking to compete, if you're looking to go back to the playoffs in 2023 and then hope to build off of that again in 2024, I think you could do a lot worse than Al Woods at that nose tackle position. And I think I would love for him to be back in a Seahawks uniform if he chooses to come back and play.
I would love it as well. Restructure, do what you got to do, because there's a void that needs to be filled. Hey, guys, you miss any part of the show, then you got to make sure you subscribe to the Bump and Stacey podcast. The latest Seattle sports news available on your phone every single weekday. Available wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts. Please rate and review if you do subscribe. Hit us with that 5-star. All right. Coming up next, we're going to talk to the big man. Haven't spoken to him in a while. That's Big Ray Roberts. That's next on the Bump and Stacey Show on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.